Welcome to 21. I'm Drew Lasker. I'm a family man, professional athlete, and business owner of Train Harder 21 and 21 Media. Yvonne Harris and I have teamed up and created this podcast to explore the life lessons that come along with being an athlete. Why 21? It's my jersey number and a key part to my great fortune and career. So it seems fitting for this podcast.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Harris. I'm a proud boy mom and an advocate for efforts that improve the lives of women and children. Experiencing success as an athlete or in any facet of life does not happen by accident. There must be clarity, intention, and the willingness to pivot. Our guests on 21 share their journeys in ways that cause you to reflect, assess, and then take action. We are so thankful for the stories shared on this podcast because Drew and I know their wisdom shortens someone else's path to success. Enjoy this episode of 21.
Welcome to 21. Every athlete, no matter the sport, plays for one purpose, the goal of becoming a champion, reaching the pinnacle of their sport. Today's guest is not only a champion, a seven-time champ to be exact, and some would argue the GOAT in the high school ranks. The accolades are endless as we welcome the 2014 High School Coach of the Year, Texas Sports Hall of Fame inductee, Katy High School head football coach, Gary Joseph. Coach, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and I appreciate you having us.
Yeah, we're glad you're here, Coach. Drew, is this where you went to high school?
I did. I'm a former Katy proud alumni, class of 2000. That was a long time ago.
Well, if you're a proud member of the 2000 class, you ought to know we won 9 state championships, and we've been at part of 8 of them around here.
Okay. Thank you for the audit, Coach.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes. Hold him accountable on this deal, too, now.
Absolutely. You're right. We received the feedback. Hey. But Drew, I think it's neat that we're on with the coach from your former high school. So this will be fun today.
Yeah, this will be awesome. I think the intriguing thing, Coach, is that, you know, everyone knows you as Coach, but I don't know if I've seen too much out there that really tells your story. So I'm excited today to get a little bit behind the coaching title and get to know Gary Joseph today.
You pretty much know me. This is what I do. This is my job and thing, but it's good. It's a lot of fun. Go ahead.
Awesome. But before we get started, Coach, obviously you're a coach. And before you get into your training, I know you like your guys to get a little loosener, warmed up. So we like to get here warmed up on 21 as well with the game we call 21 Questions with 21 Rapid Fire. We put you in the hot seat. No pressure. You ready?
Yep.
First question right off the bat, Coach. Whataburger or In-N-Out?
Whataburger. It's Texas.
Beer or tequila?
Neither.
Beach or mountains?
Neither. I have probably the beach out there. I haven't been to the beach in years and years.
Twitter or Instagram?
Twitter.
Test out a little bit of your hip hop knowledge here. Tupac or Biggie?
I don't know either one of them. Tupac.
Jordan or LeBron?
Jordan.
Popeyes or Chick-fil-A?
Chick-fil-A.
Las Vegas or Miami?
Las Vegas.
You an action guy or rom-com?
Action.
IHOP or Waffle House?
IHOP.
East Coast or West Coast?
West Coast.
Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Car or truck?
Truck.
Netflix or Hulu?
Netflix.
Sprite or Dr. Pepper?
Dr. Pepper.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Xbox or PlayStation?
My kids would probably say Xbox. I'd say PlayStation. I don't know. It was earlier one.
Dishes or laundry?
Ooh, dishes.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Homemade or takeout?
Homemade.
And finally, not that you have time for either, but club guy or house party?
House party, I guess.
Closer to the bed, huh, Coach? Thanks for playing with us, Coach.
Okay. Yes, you're out the hot seat, Drew, as you would normally say.
All right, Coach. Well, we mentioned about the plethora of accolades in the introduction, and most know you as Coach, but not really the man away from the sideline. So could you share with our listeners a little bit about Gary Joseph before the coach?
I grew up in Wharton High School. I played there for my dad. And he was probably the most influential person in my life. No, probably he was the most influential person, not just as a coach and mentor, but as a father. And, you know, he just very much had us go to, he was a true Catholic. And we were people that there wasn't a Sunday we weren't in church. And we were, you know, he raised those kind of kids. I had four brothers and sisters, two sisters and two brothers and stuff. So we're a good Catholic family. And my dad and my mom both sit there and raised us. You know, people talk about coaching, and one thing that I learned, you know, from my dad, and I knew about it going into this thing. You know, if I was going to be a father, I was going to do the same thing he did. And when you're with your kids, it isn't about quantity, it's about quality. You know, because I, you know, a coach, you're going to spend a lot of hours up there. You're going to spend a lot of hours with other people's kids and things. And when it's, you know, given time, that's why I was laughing about the vacations and stuff. We very, very seldom took vacations and things. And I have very seldom taken vacations. But when it's time, if my kids were participating in something, I tried to be there. You know, they knew that if I was late, I was late because I was working. I wasn't late because I was out doing something else. And that's just, you know, the way that we were raised, you know, it's the way I talk to our coaches too, you know, the ones of them that have young kids, that, you know, you raise your kids, you know, you take care of your kids, you know, these kids up here are yours, but you have to take care of your kids too. And it's not about the quantity of it, it's about the quality. And, you know, when you have time to be with them, you take care of them. And that's the same thing we were raised. My dad moved around. I had a brother, one of my brothers. I was born deaf, and so my father took us to Oklahoma City when they had a very, very good deaf school there. And I remember going and we'd go there in the mornings, you know, before we were in school, and we'd get to look through the two-way mirror and watch as they learned, as they were teaching him how to read and read lips and things. And that was quite an experience for us and things. You know, today you couldn't tell that he was born deaf. He learned how to talk. He learned how to relift. You know, of course, the hearing aids were quite different than what they are today and stuff. But, you know, but and so we went from Victoria to Oklahoma City. And my dad coached there for about 7 years. About 7 years. Then we went back to Corpus Christi, where he was an assistant coach, and moved to Wharton, where he was a head coach there too and stuff. And he was in Wharton for about 12 years and stuff. And I spent my high school years there, you know, it's a neat little town, you know, a good community. And, you know, it's like you sit there and read a lot, very different. You know, my dad went to Wharton when they were just past, you know, segregation and things. And, you know, they combined Wharton High School with the Wharton Wolves. And it was quite different, you know. But, you know, I remember a lot of his ex-players, the ones that were there at his funeral, the ones that were there and kept up with him, you know, in his last few years, Sam Golden and a lot of those guys, you know, they would tell you, you know, that you know, my dad was the same as the rest of us, that he made them the men they were today. It didn't make any difference. The color of your skin, the thing made difference was what they had in their heart. And, you know, so it was a great experience. You know, I ended up graduating from Wharton, went to junior college on an athletic scholarship, stayed there for a couple of years, and then graduated in about 3.5 years, you know, total from Sam Houston. I knew what I was going to do when I went to college and stuff. So, I mean, it was one of those things. It didn't take me long and stuff. And then after I graduated from Sam, my first high school job was at Luling, Texas with Lynn Etheridge. And Lynn Etheridge was in the High School Hall of Fame, the High School Hall of Honor, and Coaches Association. And it was a great experience there, you know, to take your first high school job. We finished that first year 10-1, and we had a really, really 11-1. We had a really good football team and stuff, and it was quite an honor. And I left there and went to Brazosport High School, coached at Brazosport for Joe Means, another guy in the Texas High School Hall of Honor and stuff. And, And it was a great experience there. And then I left and became a defensive coordinator at Austin Westlake. I stayed there for 2 years before coming to Katy. And I've been at Katy now for 30, this is my 39th year, fixing to start 40 next year.
Wow.
I married my next door neighbor, Sheila. We've been married, you know, over 40 years and stuff. And she's my, not just my best friend, but she's my, you know, she's somebody, my confidant and stuff. One has always been very supportive. I have three kids. You know, the oldest one is 40, and the next one's 38, and the next one's 36. So, and my daughter is one that's come through because I got three grandkids and stuff. And you know, I told my daughter if I knew grandkids this much fun, I would never have kids and stuff. And think, but you know, there's fun and things and. And they enjoy being around my wife, and they enjoy being around us. And, you know, they love coming to Katy football and stuff. You know, it didn't take them long to get brainwashed and understand what Katy football is about. But, you know, it's you know, I've been very blessed at Katy. I had the ability to have really, really good assistants since I've been the head coach. I was an assistant here for 22 years. We won three state championships. The first was in 1997, and we won in 2001, 2003. I took over in 2004, and I've been very blessed to have great coaches and great kids around here. And we've been able to win five state championships, been to the state championship game 9 times and stuff as a head coach and 5 others as an assistant. So, you know, a lot of coaches go through their whole career and don't get to one. So I understand how very, very lucky, and very, very fortunate I am and stuff. So, and you know, we've got great administration here at Katy. I've had some really, really good, brilliant principals and stuff. And people support our kids, and they let me hire great coaches and people that you'd want coaching your kids and things. That's been very, very important. But, you know, football's pretty much my life. You know, I don't hunt, I don't fish, and I don't golf. You know, it's just pretty much very bland. You know, my wife goes on vacations in summers, and she goes to the beach and stuff. I stay here and work and stuff. And I just feel like that. If our kids are here working out and stuff, then I need to be here. But, you know, I know that's a lot of old-fashioned things, but it's just, you know, the way I am. I'd feel guilty if I went and things. But we go to coaching convention every year and things, and I consider that a vacation because it's off for about 3 or 4 days and stuff. But other than that, there's not a whole lot that you know, excites you about Gary Joseph and things. It's just, you know, pretty plain and simple, you know. Eat, sleep, go to work, go to church. And so that's about where it is.
Coach, did you ever play any sports other than football?
I ran in high school. I ran track. Of course, that was, you know, one of those things, you know, when my dad's old fashioned, he made you do that stuff. He believed that if you couldn't run, or, you know, you couldn't play sports and stuff. And you're probably right and stuff. I wasn't real good at it and stuff. And early on, I was like all young kids in 7th, 8th, 9th grade. I played football, basketball, and then ran track and stuff. It's just, you know, you go in a community, that's about all you can do and stuff, play sports. But, you know, I enjoyed it and stuff. And things. You know, high school wise, my junior year, I was just pretty much a football player.
And how did you set yourself apart from your teammates?
You know, that was the thing that you learn as a coach's kid, that, you know, you have to, and you're held to a higher standard and stuff. And, you know, that's a tough thing. And, you know, I try to, you know, instill it in my kids and things, you know, no matter how good you are, how good you do, everybody's going to sit there and say the only reason you play is because you're a coach's kid. You know, and you know, that's one thing that I, you know, had done with my kids. Is, you know, the expectation was that they always do their best. And it's the same expectation that I've had with my kids here at Katy since I've become the head coach. And I'll tell the kids at the junior high, and I'll tell the kids at the high school the same thing every day. As long as they're doing their best on the football field, in the classrooms, when they go home, then they have nothing to be ashamed about. They have nothing to be ashamed of and things. And this, you know, you held to a higher standard. So how do I separate them? Just by sitting there always hustling. You know, that's the thing that you know, you may not be great at, you know, at what you do, but you can always hustle. You can always do your best. And so that's how we separated and stuff.
Well, Coach, at the top, you kind of walked us through a little bit of your coaching journey, which, you know, began at Luling High School. Were you a head coach at Luling, or were you an assistant?
No, I went there as a linebacker coach, and I coached wide receivers at Luling. And I left from there. And when I went to Brazosport, I coached receivers and headed up the JV team. And then when I left there, I went to Westlake and was a defensive coordinator at Westlake. And that's where it started. Then I came to Katy because, you know, I really wanted to sit there and coach in a 6'8 program. It was 5A back then, but I wanted to experience spring training. And it's something that Westlake at the time was 4A and things. And Luling was a 3A school. And I wanted to be able to sit there and know what spring training was about. Cause I, you know, felt like if I became a head coach, I didn't want to sit there and wander into it and stuff. And I thought, well, I'll go to Katy and stay there a few years and go on. And little did I know, I'd be here for 39 years and stuff. Yeah, it's been a great place to raise kids.
And how did the Katy situation present itself? Did you just see an opening, or did someone give you a call and say that this position is open?
Athletic director at the time was Jack Rhodes. Mike Johnson just became the head coach, and they were looking for a secondary coach. And they'd heard from the old head coach at Westlake that I was looking and things. And so they called me and asked me if I'd be interested and asked if I'd come down for an interview. And I did, took the job and moved the family down here in early June and stuff. And so we got to sit there and get moved in and stuff. I had one son there. My wife was expecting our second son. So it was a lot of fun.
And while you were the assistant coach at Katy, you had an opportunity to win 3 state championships. But let's rewind back to 1994, because I had just moved to Katy. I was in 7th grade, but I attended Royal Middle School. I didn't move to Katy until my 8th grade year. And you guys are playing Plano in the state championship game. And this is actually the very first time that I hear about Katy football. And I remember thinking as a young kid, I was like, wow, a school that's literally 2 miles away from my house is playing in the championship game. Ultimately, you guys go on to lose 28-7. But I just want you to reflect, because now we fast forward, you had all this success. What do you remember about that game that has stuck with you and that has basically helped you along the way by getting to this pinnacle and then coming up short?
Well, you can backtrack to even from there. You know, when I first came to Katy, Katy had just split and had Katy and Katy Taylor. And it was 1982. And Katy, when you know a school and Katy hasn't grown like it is here today and things. And Katy was, you know, at the split hurt Katy High School really bad. They hadn't had a lot of success before they split. And when they split, it really hurt us. And I remember thinking, what have I done? And things, you know, because we weren't very good. You know, we weren't very athletic. We weren't very strong. And we didn't play together real well and stuff. And that was a tough time and stuff, you know. And we had to, until we basically in 82, 83, and 84, you know, those 3 years were really tough. 85, we became competitive. We were 4-6 and stuff. And we became competitive. And then in 86, we won the first championship in Katy, you know, in 20 years and stuff and things. It was a neat thing, but it was a big celebration, Katy. We'd gone undefeated and stuff. You know, you'd gone from being 2-8 and 3-7 to winning it, you know, going 10-0. It spoke real highly of our kids. And then the next year, in 87, we were 5-5. And so we went backwards. And in 88 and 89, you know, the kid in 88, you know, we were 9-1. And we had a good football team and stuff. We lost to Willow Ridge, a really, really good Willow Ridge team in the playoffs. We finally won our first, you know, playoff game in 89. We were 11-1 then and stuff. And lost on the last second play and things. So it was a building process. And 94, 92, we'd gone to the quarterfinals. So we were, you know, we knew we were getting close. And in 94, you know, we made it to the state championship game. The Plano game was tough. You know, we were coming off a real big victory against Converse Judson. You know, Converse Judson was the deal back then. And just to get to the game was a big deal for our kids and stuff. And, you know, our kids played hard and they held in there as long as they can, you know, and in halftime we were within 3. It just, You know, the bottom fell out in the second half. You know, we just, you know, we got out physical, down muscle, but it taught us a big lesson about, you know, how to prepare. And we knew that if we could get there, that we would have to sit there and play extremely well to win and stuff. And you can't, you know, and the big thing I think it taught our kids, you can't get caught up in a moment. It's the next game. You know, it's a state championship game, but it's the next game. You can't look at it like that and things and stuff. But it was good and stuff. So 94 game, you know, Plano, you know, again, they're another one of the story programs. Sit there and play Judson and Plano back-to-back during that time was really big for us. And it was, you know, like I said, it taught us and it showed us how to sit there and respond to games like that. You know, so I felt like that was the next stepping stone and stuff. We knew that we needed to get back and things. And, you know, it was a fight to get back and stuff. But, you know, the 97 team was very talented. But, you know, they were one of those groups that, you know, they weren't, you know, end up being 14-1 and stuff and win the state championship. But, you know, that was a great thing because it did show we could play. And stuff. So, yeah, it was a great journey.
Coach, I was impressed, you know, just reading, going through your resume, obviously prepping for this pod. But I think now I'm even more impressed with your memory. You going back and you're remembering the team records. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, that's the strange thing. My wife gets on me all the time. I remember plays and games from 20 years ago, and sometimes I can't remember my own kids' birthdays and stuff. But I mean, that's part of it.
There's only so much, Coach, that can fit in our brains. But during your early years at Katy, you coached your sons. Now, you talked to us a moment ago about being the son of the coach. Now, what was it like coaching your own children? And what advice do you give parents who coach their children?
You know, I coached my sons like I told you, like I was coached. My dad, you know, when we went home, we kept the games and we kept the stuff that we were doing at home, I mean, at school and stuff. When we got home, he was a father and he wasn't a coach and things and stuff. You know, I may have wanted to talk to him about it and things, but that's the same with my sons. And, you know, I had one son, John, was born with a birth defect and he played and probably, you know, was told not to play and stuff, but he played because he wanted to be a part of it. Stuff and he was a part of it. He got to be a part of the 97 state championship team, play on the 98 team that got to the state championship game, got disqualified. So, you know, went through a lot of highs and lows with him and things. And then my other son Jeff, you know, he was an all-state football player his senior year and things. And they were two contrasting kids and stuff. And you know, both of them, you know, still are big parts of this program today. You know, and they understood and they wouldn't have given it up for anything. You know, I had talked to them, you know, one of them about, you know, maybe taking another opportunity to head coach and leaving Katy. And when I didn't, he was very thankful because he wanted to finish up here. You know, being a part of the Katy program, you know, instilled a lot of pride in both of them. And both of them are great people and great human beings today and stuff. And I think it's a lot of because, you know, they did go through a program like this and stuff. So the advice I'd give the parents is enjoy the process. Enjoy your kids. It's not about, you know, your kids. And the same thing I tell our parents, you know, not just football. I mean, my coach's kids, but kids ever, but all parents, you know, it's, you know, playing football isn't about getting a scholarship. Playing football is about learning how to be a teammate, learning how to trust, learning how to be unselfish. And, you know, and those are the things that, you know, you're going to get out of this thing. And, you know, the character building stuff that people talk about in football every day, it's very true. You know, you're going to learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about your game if you just sit there and enjoy the process. And when you get out here, you'll finally realize later on that sometimes mom and dad and sometimes coach do a lot more than you thought they did at the time.
Yeah, you're right about that. That's great advice, Coach. And when anyone thinks about Katy football, they think about all the success. And there's been very little adversity, but there has been some adversity. And you actually just mentioned it, the 97 or 98 season. I can't remember. You would remember. But just for our listeners out there, just take us through that moment. You know, you guys are getting ready to travel up. I can't remember where it was.
And we were going to Texas Stadium to play Midland Lee. And right. 1998, we had an undefeated team. And you know, this group of kids in 98 coming up, you know, off the state championship in 97, they really were overachievers. They played and they did well because they played real hard for each other. Very, very close-knit group and things. And the team, we won in the state quarterfinals 40-0. We beat a good Clearbrook team then, played extremely well, got way ahead. And we had our, you know, we pretty much emptied the bench and tried to get everybody in the game. And we had a tight end at the time. This was a time where you still, instead, you know, we have all the electronic progress reports now, but back then they were all signed and you got your t-shirts to sign off on them and stuff and say that you passed everything. And he forged a teacher signature on his. And when he forged the teacher signature, we played the next week, we played San Antonio MacArthur in a real close ball game and stuff. And the teacher that he had failed the class saw him stand on the sidelines and went to the principal the next and didn't know that we would beat his club, but went to the principal and said, asked why he was on the sidelines. And then it came up, you know, the day before the game. And they called the UIL the morning of the game. Our kids were in the meeting room there. And a lot of them had already packed their stuff and put on the bus. And I got a call from Coach Johnson. And I went and got them off the bus. He told me to get them off the bus. And we took them to the team room. And he told them then that we were going to be disqualified, that they weren't going to have a chance to go play the state championship. Just the emotion in the room. It was, imagine, you know, what you would feel like and stuff and things to sit there and have an opportunity to go win a championship, you know, taken from you for something that really they had no control over and stuff. And we really had no control over it. It was just, you know, it was an error by a kid and things. And I guess he didn't even realize the ramifications of it, you know, and realize what he had done. You know, we had some kids that handled it very, very well and things and stuff and things that got up and spoke. And a lot of them spoke and things and very emotional and things and stuff. It just, you know, it was a tough thing.
And Coach, is this where you lean into your faith when those things happen?
You have to and things. And that was what I was saying. That, you know, the character of our kids really showed up. Man, you would have thought that somebody would have gone after that kid and things. Nobody ever touched him and pretty much they were. A lot of them were upset about it and upset about what he did, but nothing was ever said. That kid came back to school, but, you know, when we got back in the semester and stuff, and he went through the rest of the school year and things. But it was just, you know, you have to sit there and allow them, you know, the character that you taught your kids and the faith that you have. And you know, and we all, you know, believed, that God had a plan for everybody. Man, we were lucky enough in 1999, the next year, to sit there and go to the state championship, lost to Garland. We're up at halftime and stuff. So they felt a little bit of revenge, you know, for some of them that, you know, that were there. They were underclassmen, but it still didn't take the sting out of the ones from the 98 squad. You know, they still talk about that today and stuff. I felt bad for those kids and stuff, just, you know, because they were convinced they were going to win the state championship. You know, like I said, you got to, you know, and this school and this place, community, is, you know, you as a football coach and as any type of teacher, you know, you have to teach kids, you know, how to lose too. And, you know, and you can't accept losing, but you have to teach them how to lose. And, you know, you can't just sit there and not have any character and beliefs that there are lessons to be learned from each loss.
Yeah, I remember that moment, and I remember thinking that, man, I wonder what's going to happen to this kid. And I remember that actually nothing happened to the kid, and I think that says more about the culture of the Katy football program, something that, you know, me as a alumni is proud about and you as a coach should be proud about. But, you know, 2004, you take over as the head coach of the program. Was that something that was pretty much set in stone that you would take over once Coach Johnson leave, or did you just take us a little bit through that process, that transition?
Coach told me that he was going to do it. And then as soon as he told the superintendent, you know, the superintendent and the athletic director, they called me over to the office the next day and they didn't open the job up and stuff. They just called and asked me if I would be interested in taking over. And I was very thankful for that. I felt like that the time I deserved to be in that position. Stuff like that, I'd been here for 22 years and the success we had, but I didn't want it just for myself. We had some really, really good other coaches on staff too. And with this, you know, I knew that I could add stability to the, you know, to the program and things, and they would continue having jobs if they wanted them and things. And so, you know, that was real big for me. Is you know, it wasn't just about me. It was about, you know, having the assistants on the staff and things. I knew there'd be continuity on, and you know, within the kids and stuff. And I knew about enough about the program and what we were doing and stuff. So, you know, it was a good thing. I felt like the district handled it the right way and stuff. Not every district will do that and stuff. Very thankful for Katie doing it. So.
Well, I think, Coach, they made the right decision. But people from the outside looking in, when they look at or think about Katie football, obviously they think of tradition, a winning tradition. What are some of the key components of the program's success? Why are you guys consistently, year in, year out, able to have success there?
I think it's a lot of reasons. You know, the trust factor. You know, the kids trust the coaches and the coaches trust the kids. I think that's big. I think that, you know, because of the way our program has to run, our kids have learned to be unselfish. And I think that's something that's not really in vogue in the world today, because, you know, all you read on Twitter and all you read on Instagram that you asked me about, it's about me and stuff. And people talk about themselves, you know, and that's one of the things I've talk to our kids about. You know, we've been blessed and had some kids go on scholarship, and they want to get online and tell everybody how blessed they are to receive a scholarship. Why don't you, you know, and I, my question to them is, why don't you tell them how blessed you are to have teammates to help you get the scholarship? And, you know, and now, you know, that's, you know, but that's the unselfishness, I think, that been different. And I think the kids are dedicated. I think they showed that this year during this COVID thing and stuff. And they believe in the team first attitude thing. So, you know, I think, you know, you asked, you know, some of the things, those are some of the things. You know, the other thing that Katie has, and you know as well as I do, is Katie has still got a small town community and stuff. We still have a town. We still have a place called Katie. It's not a suburban school. It's not, you know, where we have eight other schools in the district right now, either high school or the district. And it's not a suburban. You still have a place in the community where these people get out and support their kids. You know, they come out, you know, we sell out of season tickets every year and stuff, because even the old head, they still want to be a part of it. They still want to sit there and come to watch Katie and watch their kids, you know. And you know, they want to, you know, they're very prideful about the way their kids carry themselves and about the way the kids play the game and stuff. And, you know, very hard-nosed and things. You know, having a community is still important. Having support from the community, you know, and it's been a blessed community, because you don't win as much as we've won without, you know, being a blessed community. And things. People still expect our kids to act the right way. And you know, that's, you know, he said, well, that's just a little thing, but, you know, that's part of, you know, who our program is. People will tell you that most of the time, you know, our kids are very disciplined about what they're doing, very regimented and stuff. And they learn that because, you know, this is who we are. This is who we want them to be. Let them grow up, be successful. You're going to have a bad apple. And, you know, in 39 years, there's going to be a bad apple or two. But for the most part, we've had really good kids.
Coach, one thing that I always was curious about was early in the program in the late 90s, when you guys started to have the success, there were very few athletes that received Division I scholarship despite the team's success. Nowadays, it seemed like a third of your players get scholarships every year. What's the difference? Is it that now it's just more exposure, or is it just that now you have better athletes there?
It's both. You know, we get better exposure because there's got to be, people feel like there's got to be a reason to win it. Or they want somebody, you know, and the kid to be a part of their program that have one, that know it when it is. You know, there's a thing when I first, you asked about when I first came to Katie, you know, that there was a feeling that our kids were playing not to lose instead of playing to win. And I think that a lot of these schools and things want the kids in their program that have won, that know how to win, you know, and sit there and know what it takes to win. But we have better football players now than we did then, you know, and we didn't have a lot of Division I players because we didn't, but we had really, really good high school football players that made good football teams and stuff. And a lot of them I wouldn't trade for a Division I player because, you know, they weren't playing for the scholarship. They were playing because they wanted to win. They wanted to be the best.
That's great. And, you know, we touched a little bit on your memory earlier. Are there any games or players that kind of stick out at the top of your head?
You know, you want to ask me that question after, you know, you should just talk about how much we won and stuff. If I would have for one play, you know, no, there's been some great football teams here. You know, the one that probably, you know, and you remember as much about the losses and stuff as a lot of times you do about the wins and things. You know, we've lost, like I said, I've been head coach, we've lost the state championship game 4 times. And you remember those, and you remember, you know, the 2018, you know, that followed the 2017 that won the first championship, my first championship as a head coach and stuff. And that you know, we went in 05 and lost a South Lake Carroll team, and in 07 we won, and 08. We lost our first 2 games of the year and got beat pretty handily. And it was because of the resiliency of the kids and the resiliency of the staff, you know, and the resolve those kids didn't want to fail, you know. And I asked them, you know, at the end of the year, what the difference was. And it was like I said, they said they were afraid to lose. They were afraid to be the first group that didn't win a championship. You know, and the group before them had won a championship. You know, until they realized that they had to be who they were and stuff. And then they got on a roll in the playoffs and, you know, ended up winning the state championship. And that was really a compliment to them and stuff. But there's not one group out. You know, we've been undefeated several times and we've been proclaimed mythical national championships 2 or 3 times. And those are all great teams. And, you know, but, you know, last year's team was a good high school football team and stuff and things. And, you know, I had some good players. So, you know, I can't point out any one game. Yes, the one lasting memory is what you talked about a while ago was the disqualification in 1998, because that's something that will always stick with us and stuff. But you know, it's like you tell your kids, you don't dwell on a loss and stuff. You know, you learn from it, move forward and stuff. And hopefully our kids did.
Coach, you've also received several coaching awards. What do you attribute to your success as a coach?
My dad and him teaching me that it's going to put the kids first. I think the success I have as a coach has been because of the staff that I've been able to hire. And I think the biggest thing, too, is you know, people will tell you I'm pretty genuine. I'm going to shoot straight with them and shoot straight with their kids. And I'm not going to sit there and sugarcoat a lot of things. And I'm not a man of a lot of words and stuff. You know, we're going to sit there and make sure that our kids have every opportunity to be successful. And I think, you know, if you put your kids first, and I think you'll always have a chance and stuff.
I can tell you're a lifelong learner, and obviously you study the sport of football. Is there anything that you could do different or better?
Oh, yeah, you always do better. You know, probably patience, you know, and sometimes I have, not enough patience. But, you know, the kids, my old players, you know, the older ones that have been around will tell you that I've mellowed over the years, too, and things. And I think, you know, I've grown to have more patience. It's like everything else, you know, I guess, you know, you understand the process. You understand, you know, how to sit there and do something. You know, you have to have a little bit more patience with the kids. But, you know, I think that, you know, the biggest thing that, you know, is patience. I am more patient, you know, and have patience with my own kids and things. But, you know, I want our coaches that, you know, to, you know, enjoy their families. And you know, and I want them to go on vacations. I want them to sit there and not be afraid to do things, you know, stuff. And they, you know, with the way it is right now with the summer strength conditioning and all the programs and stuff, you can sit there and work all year round and stuff. You know, like I said, my family's grown and you know, a lot of them have young kids and stuff, and, you know, they need to enjoy their kids and enjoy the time they have with their kids and stuff as they grow up and stuff. So I think that's important, and it's probably You know, one thing I would probably do again more is probably spend more time, with my kids and stuff. But, like I told you earlier, it wasn't about quantity time. It was about quality time. And they knew I was always there for them. I don't think any one of them felt like I ever deprived them of anything.
Did your
grandkids does I know. That to you, Coach.
I was thinking the same thing. Did your grandchildren help you with the patients?
Oh, yeah. They have to. You have to. They're all the oldest is 5 and the youngest is about 5 months and stuff. So it's having 3 girls, you think, well, you always want a boy, I want a boy, but having the girls have been fun too. And things. But yeah, they, come up here and when they come into town and stuff, and their dad's a coach and stuff. So, they understand it. What goes on, but it's just, just so different. Yeah, pages.
They got you, Coach. You, when you talk about them, you start glowing. They got you.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I appreciate the homage that you've paid to your dad. Are there other coaches that you admire and look to for inspiration?
Oh, there's a lot of great coaches in the state. I've been very fortunate to know a lot of them because of my dad and things. And, he was the executive director of the High School Coaches Association. And I've, got to meet a lot of people because of that. And then I've got to meet a lot of people serving on the board of the directors of the Coaches Association and serving as a president and past president and stuff, and just being a part of it, And boy, the admiration and respect I have for a lot of those people is phenomenal. And, there's not really one, you can go from, people at Carthage, Texas, Scott Surratt, the people and Allen and people and Randy Allen's a good friend of mine at Highland Park and stuff. There are just so many great coaches in this state, they do a great job of coaching, they do a great job with kids, and you used to look on people like that. And when D.W. Rutledge turned the Judson program around and things, just watching people and how they handle those situations was always amazing to me. And like that, I got to work with some great, great coaches myself. And, Mike Johnston was here and he was a mentor and got to work with Len Etheridge and just people like that and Bobby Etheridge and out of Westlake. And getting to coach in places like that was a great thing. And like I said, you see so many different things and different ways of doing things and stuff. And, like I said, you look up in the college ranks, of course, everybody is in an admiration of Nick Saban and what he's done with the Alabama program. It's just phenomenal and things. But there's not one person that I really try to pattern myself after other than my dad.
Coach, to any of our young listeners out there hoping to become a future Katy Tiger one day, or just simply a football player at another school, what advice would you give them?
Listen to your coaches. And the biggest thing is, it's not about you. It's about you becoming a part of a team. That's the game of football. It's not an individual sport. It's not, it's not what football can do for you. It's what you can do for the program. It's what you can do for the school. It's what you can do for your community and things. And each and every day, you have to sit there and learn how to be unselfish. And like I said, there's no instant gratification. It's a process, and they have to trust the process and have to trust themselves and the cheap and easy ways of doing things. That ain't going to sit there and help them in the long run. They're not going to just roll your sleeves up and learn what work ethic is, learn what being unselfish is, learn what being, a kind person is. And you can do that, then you'll grow up and be a good player, but you'll also be a good human being.
So great advice for students. Now coach the parents. How do parents manage their relationship, their interaction with the coaches?
They're the parents and the other ones are the coaches and stuff. They need to be a parent to their kid. They don't need to try to coach their kid. So, and then they leave that up to the people that they've given that responsibility to. They need to be there to encourage their student. They need to be encourage their son or daughter. They need to sit there and talk to them at the dinner table or talk to them each and every day. And not just about football and stuff, but talk to them about life and stuff. and you know, separate themselves, you know, and not try to sit there and be the coach. Just enjoy the process. Enjoy that your son or daughter's out competing each and every day. Enjoy they're doing something that you know is going to help them when they get out of high school. You know, if nothing else, you get up every day. And then when they go to college, they're going to have to get up and go to class every day. What's going to give them the discipline to do that and stuff? And, you know, let the coaches coach your kids. And trust them that they're going to put them in the right position. Trust them they'll put them in a position to win. Trust them they'll put them in a position to be a better kid when they get out of school.
So, Coach, if a parent has a question, is it appropriate for him or her to ask, or do you just prefer that there's that distance?
Well, I don't. I mean, right or wrong, I tell our parents at the parent meeting every year, if you have a question, you pick up the phone, and you call the secretary and you come up here and meet with me face to face and stuff and think, you know, and you know, most of the time, you know, we may agree to disagree and stuff, but you know, at the end of a game is a time to approach a coach. You know, you don't talk to a coach about playing time at the end of a game. You know, you may come talk to a coach about what you can do better, what your kid can do better, what you can help your kid do and stuff. Most of the time it's going to be, you can't help them do anything. They got to do it themselves. And stuff, but it's just a reassurance thing more than anything else, I at the end of every spring, I make our coaches give a written evaluation to all our kids. Every kid in our program gets an evaluation, and I make them sign a copy and give it to their position coach, and they get in a big notebook in my office that we have it every year. And you know, if a parent has a question about their kid, it's written down there and stuff. I don't want to listen. I didn't know. What everybody, you know, and our kids are going to know, and our parents are going to know where they stand at the end of the thing, you know, but it's hard, you know, I understand it's hard because some of these kids have, you know, been a little league hero, a little league all-star and things and stuff, and, you know, and they're not playing up here. Well, again, kids mature at different times in their life and stuff. You know, my first question is if I'm being evaluated by, you know, how well, and you know, wins and losses, why would I not put my best players on the field? You know, I'm not going to sit there and, you know, have no agenda. We're not going to play politics. And that's not the way it's done around here. We have as much as we have by playing politics. We won because, you know, our kids have performed, and we're going to sit there and do the best we can to help them sit there and put their best players on the field. So, yeah.
COVID-19, I know you probably tired of hearing that phrase, and you know, probably 5 years ago we wouldn't be sitting in the Zoom, but how has it impacted your team?
It was a mess, I'll tell you that right now. I thought, you know, it's one thing, I think, you know, this is one of the most rewarding years because of that too. And from the time, you know, we were shut down last March until the time we started our strength conditioning in June, and then sit there and have the season push back 2 weeks. And during the season, have our schedule change 4 times and stuff. Having our kids, our whole varsity football team, get tested 6 times. I mean, we had to take the whole team to get tested and things and stuff. And it was really, really hard. You know, it was hard on the coaches. It was hard on the kids. But the kids held together, and and that's where all these coaches, you know, did a phenomenal job of getting through the season. UAL did a great job of navigating this to get us through the season, you know. And, you know, who would have thought we would have been playing on January 15th, a state championship game? We played after the Super Bowl and stuff. After the pros had finished their divisional playoffs and stuff. So they went after Super Bowl in February. But, you know, just to sit there and get to play that long was a neat thing and stuff. You know, and I was proud of our kids, and you know, I was disappointed, you know, like you said, that, you know, the parents, you know, and most of our parents got to see their kids play. You know, that was a great thing because of the way they, you know, sold tickets or did things, you know, because you want them to be a part of it. They want to be a part of it and stuff. But, you know, it was tough, you know, you never know who was going to be testing next. You know, we had, you know, a kid that started 8 games for us and missed the state championship game because of COVID. You know, that had to be tough on the kids, too. Had to be tough on their parents that sat there and got them that far and stuff. But, you know, in the long run, like I said, it was a tough thing, but I think it brought a lot of people together too. Like, you know, I felt very bad for the ones of them that died, and that was, you know, when they start shutting the churches down, you know, there's something wrong and stuff and things, but I think that, you know, you had to sit there and talk to your kids about having faith, you know, and the faith was, you know, doing the right thing. If it meant wearing a mask, if it meant, you know, socially distancing, if it meant not going to, you know, to a movie or, you know, to out to eat. And they had to sit there and do that. And they did that, again, by going back to what I told you earlier. For me, they did it because they weren't selfish. They wanted to sit there and have a chance to play together as a team.
And Coach, you talk about, you know, the challenge that COVID-19 has brought upon our country, but also, you know, during that time, we had the George Floyd situation and, you know, the racial tension within our country. What conversations have you had with your players regarding, you know, the racial issues that have impacted our country?
You know, as a coach, I felt like we had to have these conversations and stuff. And you know, we let them air it out. I had brought, you know, a couple of people in to talk to them, but, you know, I understood how important it was that I talked to them. And from my standpoint, you know, and I talked to them, you know, as a school and as a community, but as a kid, you know, the thing that we have to expect as citizens of this country is that everybody is held to one standard. You know, there's no black and white in this, you know, and there's no color in this. It's all about who you are. And, you know, everybody's going to be held to the same standard, you know, and we talked about that, you know, and they asked, you know, we put some type of sticker on, you know, our helmets. Yes, we did. And our thing was we were going to be held to the same standard. All our kids on our team are held to the same standard. If the people in the United States are held to the same standards and stuff and are treated the same, that's all you can ask for. And then now, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're black or white. Everybody is held to the same standard. You know, if you're not pulled over because you're black, you're not pulled over because you're white. Because everybody is held to the same standard. And we talked about that quite a bit and stuff, and how, you know, every coach, you know, didn't care, you know, what the color of their skin was or what orientation they were and stuff. It's, you were going to be held to the same standard. If I'm going to sit there and make this one do something, I'm going to make the other one do something. Well, that's what you want in the United States, in my opinion. You want everybody to be held to the same standards. So, yeah, we talked about that.
Thank you, Coach. What's next for you?
I don't know. Everybody asked me that. I'm pretty much I'm going to finish my career at Katy High School and stuff. I can pretty much say that and stuff. You know, how much longer will, you know, I'll go year to year and stuff. I still enjoy coaching. I still enjoy the kids. I still wake up every day not dreading to go to work, you know, and I enjoy what I'm doing. You know, when it comes to the point when it becomes just a job, then I'll probably sit there and quit. So, but as long as I feel like I can, you know, help kids and help this, you know, and help these grow these kids up, then I'm going to probably do it and stuff. You know, like I said, I'm very lucky. Like I told you, I've got a great family and I've got a great support group here in Katy. You know, I've got, you know, the people at Katy, of course, you stay around long enough, you'll create, you know, you'll have a lot of support and stuff. Of course, you'll have also a lot of people that, you know, wonder why he's still around and things. But, you know, I think that's the great thing about coaching and stuff. So nah, I'm not worried about that. I think that I'm going to do this until, said I become a detriment and stuff, and then I'm going to get out.
Well, we want you to do it as long as you can, Coach. And beyond the coaching convention, any plans for a proper vacation?
Nah. You know, my daughter is moving. Her husband is office line coach at Georgia State, so they're moving to Atlanta. So I probably are going to go there before I can't travel and stuff. You know, I'll let them get situated and moved into their home. But I'm going to go see them, too. That's about as far as I'm going. I know they keep trying to get me to go to the beach with them in Florida. They say, well, you'll enjoy it. Yeah, you know, you don't enjoy something when the whole time you're thinking about what you should be getting done and stuff. But no, eventually, yes, I will.
Well, Coach,
I think a trip to Atlanta counts, don't you, Drew?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, Yvonne, that if you know, your family invites you to the beach and they buy you two plane tickets, Yvonne and I will happily take it off your hands. We love us some vacation.
Well, there you go. I'm about to send the tickets to you.
So last question, Coach. When you're in the zone, what's on your playlist? What are you rocking out to?
I thought you meant our football playlist and stuff.
On your musical playlist.
I don't really have a musical playlist. I listen to music. I listen to some country music, and I listen to the music from the 70s and 60s and stuff back in my day and things and stuff. I still listen to that. It's music I can understand, you know. You know, our kids play that music out here all the time, and I can't understand half of what they're saying and stuff and things. It's just, but they can do it and they can dive to it now. But yeah, so it's fun and stuff. Music, old time music is good for me.
When you say the '70s, do you mean like disco?
No. Whatever they played the '70s and stuff. But, you know, some of it was disco, some of it was the old Bee Gees, and some of it was the CCR, including Clearwater, and all those places, and all those things, just music like that, things. Chicago, we listened to some of them, Elton John, and stuff. You know, just things that were back then. Do you remember those things?
Great music. Love it all.
Do you know what you should do, Coach, as a icebreaker, like we do on 21 with our game? At the beginning of the season, you should put your playlist in a locker room and see how your players respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
Send me the questions.
We can do that, Coach. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been fun, Coach. And, you know, we're almost a year to the date we started this podcast. And Adam Hall, actually, who you know, was our second guest on the program. And he talked on that episode about how much you had an impact on him. And he never even played football. So that says a lot about you, Coach. So, just keep inspiring.
Thank you. Like you said, it's you know, about the kids. And Adam was a neat kid, even though he wasn't a football player. He was a very unique kid and stuff. And great to watch him and the success he had. You know, so he still sends me a text every year. Even a state championship game this year, he shot me a text. Well, that's pretty dang good. But yeah, he's good. It's good to be able to, you know, have kids like that.
That's awesome. Katy High School football coach, Gary Joseph.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. To the athletes, keep being the best you can be. Run your race with excellence. To the parents of athletes, let's continue to support our children with patience, grace, and understanding, learning to recognize how to truly become the guides and the stewards that we are supposed to be. To everyone, be willing to share your experiences to help others along their paths. And always be open to the wisdom that comes your way.
For more information about the 21 Podcast, 21 Media, and services provided by Train Harder 21, visit the website at drewlasker.com and follow us across all social media platforms. Remember to add this podcast to your playlist, subscribe, rate, and review. Until next episode of 21, Train Harder.